Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Richard Stiegel, who is the CEO and co-founder of Urban FT. Richard, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Karen.
So digital banking and digital banking platforms are your area of expertise and the business that you're in. So I thought we'd talk a little bit today about a philosophical concept, perhaps, but what digital banking platforms and technology are doing to what I would call democratize the playing field for financial services. And the reason that I'm prompted to think about this is we do a lot of work on the retail payment side and examine how technology has made a difference in the availability of access, small retailers and large retailers. And what we're finding, of course, is that it does in fact level the playing field, not necessarily giving anyone a disadvantage or an advantage that they didn't earn, but at least they have the opportunity to be in front of a consumer. It's up to them what they do with that opportunity. And in fact, we're seeing in the online world, some of the smaller retailers outperform their larger counterparts. And so my question for you, Richard, is technology having the same impact in financial services and banking? Is it providing access, a level playing field for banks, both big and small?
Look, I think it's a very subjective question you're putting forward, but certainly in my opinion, I think technology, whether you want to refer to it as digital banking or simply just an evolving level of technology that's now available to financial institutions, it's definitely making or putting all financial institutions in a position where they can be part of the ecosystem and each be considered equals. I think in previous times, banks were judged based on their physical footprint, access to cash, and the certain products that were being offered, a lot of those products being around lending. When you take away the physical footprint, where people are less and less reliant on going into a branch and more reliant on being able to perform their financial transactions as and when it suits the relevant individual, then doing that via some of these new technology platforms, digital banking platforms, if you like, that is meaning that all banks can be considered somewhat equal. It's then a case of how these banks then use that technology to service their particular customers. Again, there are some banks that cater for, you know, retirees, for example. There are some banks that might cater more towards Gen X, Gen Y. So each bank has the opportunity to leverage this technology in a way that they can then better serve the demographic that they're going for. So I think we definitely are in a situation where, to use your phrase, this market is being democratized and people have, for want of a better phrase, freedom of choice as to which banks they're going to use. And it really does come down to the services as opposed to the access once these banks have that sort of technology.
So I think that's a good point. The competition becomes on the basis of what is being offered, and that's, you know, product tailored to particular stakeholders, as you point out, or just other things that speak to the assets and the strengths of that particular financial institution. I know you talk to a lot of banks in the course of a day, a week, a month, a year. How are they capitalizing on this new opportunity that technology is presenting them?
Look, the penny dropped many years ago. It definitely set in people's minds probably about 4 or 5 years ago that digital was where every bank needed to be. Every bank within reason now has some form of digital presence. I think what we're now starting to see is banks looking at how they can become more relevant to their customer, how they can fit in with a customer's day-to-day lifestyle. And internally, myself and my team, we refer to the functionality we deliver as being lifestyle functionality. We don't refer to it as being financial functionality. So we're actually delivering each piece of functionality that banks want to deliver in a lifestyle application, something that is relevant and meaningful to users' day-to-day activities. And so that is actually now the next big challenge that banks need to deal with. They need to look at how is this relevant to their particular demographic? How can this be used in a way to increase the average lifetime value of their customer? How can this be used to increase engagement with their brand? And how can this be used to deliver more value to the end user? And once the bank works out what their objectives are in that sense, then they're able to come back and say, how do we now manipulate and configure this technology to deliver on those objectives? And frankly, I think that we're starting to see banks grapple with that. And I think a really good example is that banks are used because they're trusted. And despite all the talk of disruption within the industry, I think banks are very cleverly sitting back, watching a lot of B2C startups come into the marketplace. They're looking at what works, what doesn't work, and then seeing what works, they're then able to say, all right, now look, for example, remote check capturing is probably one of the biggest and most successful product extensions that we've seen come into the banking sector. But it took some time for banks to adopt that, and they wanted to see other people try it out first, see what problems those people had, and then learn from that and then do it better.
So who is leading the way? I mean, if people are kind of hanging back and saying, well, let's just see how this works out for X, and then we'll jump on the bandwagon. It's interesting. In retail, of course, everyone talks about the Amazon effect. Is this the big banks kind of stepping in and taking this on, and then everyone else kind of falling in line? How does it work in your experience?
It's funny you mentioned the Amazon effect. I think Amazon came in and completely shook up the whole retail sector. But they were coming into a newly created ecosystem, being online commerce. They didn't come into a bricks and mortar environment and start competing with retailers on the ground. So they had a very fortunate situation. If you look at the similarities then with what's going on in the fintech sector, or in particular the banking space, the banks, as I said earlier, they have the trust. They operate in both an online and physical environment. They do a reasonable job at the end of the day. So I think you've got two drivers of innovation at the moment. Initially, it was coming from startups and organizations that want to consider themselves as disruptive forces within the B2C space. And then I think that prompted a number of the bigger banks to say, look, we've got to take innovation seriously. It's prompted the payment networks, Visa and MasterCard and Discover and even Amex, to say, we've got to be innovative. And then you've now got two driving factors. You've got startups and early stage companies that are being innovative and driving innovation. And you've got the bigger banks that are driving innovation. Following those people are the mid-tier banks and smaller banks who are saying, we've got to keep up. We've got to catch up. We've seen this work. We've seen what an impact it's had on serving customer requirements, and now we've got to deliver the same functionality. So, you know, it's a bit like a group of sheep following in a line, if you like. They all know exactly what they've got to do, and if they don't, they will be considered the black sheep of the pack.
That brings to mind another analogy, and I don't want to keep bouncing around other industries, but I think another interesting comparison is the newspaper industry. So if you think about how digital, and what we're talking about here is how digital is transforming financial services, how digital has really disrupted that whole industry, where you have basically the big guys that have the scale to survive and their business model is being adapted, but they have the scale to kind of retain their business model and do what they do. And then you have the very small local community papers that serve a very niche purpose, because you can't get that in the big guys. And it's the unwashed middle that struggles to differentiate, and where there's not a clear strategy, maybe not a clear enough differentiation. Is that what I hear you describing to be the case in in financial services, will the big guys be fine and the smaller, you know, I'm going to use the word boutique financial institutions be fine, and it's the middle guys that kind of need to wake up and figure out what they're going to do?
No, I don't think so. In my opinion, I think all banks and financial institutions recognize the need and have acted on the need to move into digital banking. I think, you know, looking at that analogy, if we look at print media, there's still a need for the content. It's all about the delivery of that content. Mm-hmm. And there's still an absolute need for banking. It's just a different method of accessing the banking functionality. We're no longer going into physical stores. We're doing it on phones. And your opening points, though, by having this technology here, you know, I've got employees who operate with or use PNC Bank as an example. I've seen some previous people who say, look, I operate, or I've had an account with a small bank and I haven't been able to, I've had to move to a bigger bank because I can't access my funds. And yet they've got similar, you know, this customer, this employee with a PNC account is actually saying, look, it's actually fine. I can do everything I need to via the mobile app now. And I frankly don't need to go into a branch. So all of a sudden, people that are moving into a big city or getting a job or want to get paid quicker because it's showing in their account quicker if they're with a big bank, this stuff's disappearing. It's no longer relevant because every bank is available to you from your handset. And I think that it's a bigger opportunity for the mid-tier and smaller FIs than it is for the big banks. The big banks probably stand to lose more than they stand to gain in this situation.
Interesting. So as you talk about the configuration of the components that reflect the lifestyle requirements of a bank's customers, I mean, that does suggest that there are things that Bank A may want and Bank B and C may not want. But are there things that are common across all lifestyle categories that are now table stakes when thinking about delivering banking services via the digital channel?
I think when you're looking at banking services, the common thing, you know, what you'd expect, you've got remote check capture, you've got balance inquiries, you've got statements, transfers. If you look at the sort of age range of 35 plus, then you're going to have a whole realm of lending functionality in there. So you're going to want to see where you're on your home loan, your motor vehicle loan. Maybe you've got a margin lending account. Maybe you've got an annuity account linked to it. You know, you're going to want to see that sort of stuff. If you look at the more of the Gen Y or millennial side of the spectrum, people are going to want instant access to cash, instant transfers if they're living hand to mouth. And so you do have the core set of functionality, and then you've got more bespoke functionality depending on the audience that you're working with or the customer base you're working with.
Final question, and this is an interesting one related to security. You mentioned trust, obviously, is critical. And have you observed or has anyone talked about the perception of security, big bank versus small bank, when services are delivered in a digital manner? Is that as important to people, or is that also a demographic-specific concern or non-concern?
Interestingly, when I talk to banks, first and foremost, security is their biggest issue or their biggest concern. If they're not absolutely certain that what they are rolling out to market exceeds industry standard security requirements, they're not going to take a gamble, and you can't blame them for that. I think when you look at the consumers, ironically, I think every consumer believes that a bank is trustworthy within reason. I know we look at banks and bankers in two different lights. You've got those that are providing transactional services and then those that are doing more corporate finance type banking. But if we look at the transactional bankers, they're trusted, the banks are trusted, and if I've downloaded a banking app, I expect that it's going to be safe and my credentials are safe. I think another thing which the networks have successfully done is that, you know, they protect the user, the end user, against fraudulent transaction, and the bank is ultimately liable for that. So the user is in a very protected situation. The younger demographic is more skeptical, however, and yet the younger demographic are the ones that will try some of the new non-bank services that are out there. You have some of the underserved market that will try some of the non-bank services that are out there, but they're trying them because they don't have any alternative. So security is front and center on the bank's mind. It's very much on the mind of the consumer, but the older demographic feel more comfortable using it because they're aware that ultimately they're protected. The younger demographic, in my opinion, are more skeptical about it, but yet willing to try something out.
Interesting. Well, Richard, as always, it's a fascinating conversation that we tend to have about this transformation of financial services and one that is coming upon the industry. It feels very quickly. I mean, even though this has been building for a long time, the pace at which I think the change is now being internalized and made visible to the consumer feels quick. Thank you very much for your insights today, and I look forward to chatting again soon. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Karen.